As an emergency physician, I've seen firsthand what happens when people lose themselves in their work. That's why I built a coaching practice grounded in real data, not guesswork. When we work together, you'll start with a DISC assessment, which will generate a 40-page deep dive into your behavioral strengths, your motivators, and the workplace triggers that cost you the most. Then we bring in objective biometric data. We can use any number of wearable devices, including the Oura Ring, to understand how your sleep and recovery directly shape your capacity for joy and performance. This isn't a one-size-fits-all program. Every coaching engagement is customized to you because the work of following your heartline looks different for everyone. If you're a healthcare professional ready to reconnect with why you started, visit the link in the show notes or head over to AndreaAustinMD.com.
Welcome to Heartline, Changemaking in Healthcare. I'm your host, Dr. Andrea Austin, a board-certified emergency physician, physician development coach, and educator. After years on the front lines, I've learned that real change in healthcare starts within. Each episode invites you to explore the inner work that unlocks clarity and bold leadership, because healing systems through changemaking begins with following our heartlines. I am so excited today to have with me Dr. Rashmi Shram. This has been a long time coming. I've heard from several people who have been on the podcast before that I must get to know Rashmi. So go back and listen to the episodes from Dr. Sheeta Shafi and Dr. Stephanie Byerly. Finally, our schedules have aligned. So a little bit about Dr. Shram. She is board certified in family medicine. She's also a certified coach, meditation and laughter yoga teacher. I can't wait to ask about that. She hosts the Inner Peace and Power podcast, available on all major platforms. She helps high-achieving, busy women, hello, to tap into their own inner peace and power so they can enjoy living a more energetic and purposeful life. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Dr. Andrea Austin. It's such an honor to be here and to get to know you a little bit better as well.
And please, we'll do first names if it's okay with you, just to keep it casual.
100%.
Okay. There's a lot of interesting things here. So you definitely fit the description of a change maker. What was the moment or experience that you started to realize your inner change maker?
Ooh, that's such a great question. We'll start actually with residency. As a first-year resident, noticed that our pay gap in our residency, and this just so happened when I was talking to a med school classmate and I was like, what do you guys get paid? And she was in New York. And I was like, wait a second. This was like before really the internet was very prolific, but I spent an inordinate amount of time learning about what the national resident salary was and asking a ton of people. And I went back and requested a meeting with not just like the head of the residency. And I'm just thinking about the gall that I had.
It's like,
what was I thinking? And then he actually like sent me off to basically the CFO of the hospital. And I laid out my case and I must have come across confident enough because everyone in the residency got a 15% raise immediately, starting immediately. And I was like, oh, like I'm an eldest daughter. I have that kind of eldest daughter energy and of always wanting to help or fix or make sure everyone's okay. It can actually definitely backfire on you, obviously. But in this scenario, I recognize that, okay, it is okay for me to go after this thing, even in medicine, because I hadn't quite done so in medicine just yet.
I love that story. And it just made me think back. My first time asking for a raise was as a resident assistant, an RA in the dorms. And we formed a little team of the three of us. And then we found out how much the RAs were making at other state schools, which it turned out we were the lowest paid. And it was that early lesson in data. Do your homework and then go in with the data and speak up. And I had totally forgotten that story. So, wow. And I'm like thinking back, wow, 21-year-old Andrea did something that like 30-some-year-old Andrea had to learn to do all over again.
Oh, for sure. I think medical training tends to kind of beat that out of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. Okay. So reading a little bit about your bio, family medicine physician, and now you're in coaching. And so I'm guessing you've discovered a few things that help sustain you when you're doing this challenging change-making work. Because making change, when we walk into somebody's office and ask for a raise, you are ruffling feathers and there's a lot of emotions involved. And so it takes a lot to sustain us. So what have you learned about that individually?
Oh, what a great question. So what the arc of how this whole thing sort of happened for me practicing clinically, which I practiced family medicine for 22 years. And so it wasn't a short period of time. It was a beautiful long period of time. I was in it long enough to see the constriction begin and then the constriction within medicine as far as admin and the metrics and all this and the admin work really going overboard. And so I've been in medicine since 2000. That's when I graduated medical school. And so what started to happen for me about 15 or 16 years ago when I was an attending and everything looked truly perfect on the outside, I had to little girls. I had a husband. I had the car. I had the house. And of course, we all know what arrival fallacy is. And I was deep in it and I was deep in burnout. And I just could not really find moments that felt okay unless I was buffering, unless I was ignoring, unless I was distracted. And, you know, like this is pre-internet generally. We weren't necessarily turning to the internet when we had these kinds of issues. We were turning to people around us. And all of my closest friends were physicians and they were all equally burned out. And so there was like this like water of just deep sort of like anxiety and cynicism that I was swimming in. And I was like, this cannot be it, guys. Like I could not have done all of this to get here right now. Like I want to feel better. And of course I did nothing about it other than the same things I had done for a couple more years until all of my mental, emotional anguish began to translate into physical ailments. And I really started to get sick. And the traditional kinds of things weren't helping because they were all related to stress. And so I have a background in yoga. I have a background in meditation in that I actually grew up in India with a grandmother who basically instilled a lot of these different values, particularly Ayurveda. And so I was like, wait, why don't I try something like this again? Because I had continued a thread of it on and off, particularly meditative practices, which were not at all in vogue back then. Everyone's meditating now, which is amazing. But, you know, back then, it felt like there was something wrong with me if I needed to meditate. And that was, of course, an internalized oppression on my part. And so I said, okay, well, let me do a deep dive. And I actually signed up to be a meditation teacher for that training, because one of the things they said was, okay, well, if you do this thing, then you are saying that you're going to meditate twice a day for the next 15 months. And I was like, let me sign, because I needed external kind of like pressure at that point, which I didn't necessarily recognize. I had no intention of teaching it or do anything else with it. But ultimately, as we progressed, one of the qualities of that program was that we had to teach. And so I started to like gather my staff during lunch or do like mornings at different places of meditation, and people started to hear about it. And so then I was teaching very regularly at the local YMCA, all of those things. And it ended up morphing into what I now call the gateway into everything else. So that opened up into Ayurveda teacher training. And then that opened me up into yoga nidra and then advanced yoga nidra and then yoga therapy. They were all deeper parts of the one thing that I was really starting to understand and integrate back into not just my own life, but also as much as I could in a high volume family medicine practice, which was starting to get very untenable for me. And so those practices were born out of a need for me to find some amount of healing and for me to find myself. And once they started to work, I had this deep passion to want to share it. And when I ran into coaching right around the pandemic, someone said, you should look into coaching because it would help you be a better doctor. And I was like, yeah, let me do that. And when I started to do that, I was like, wait, this is what we've been doing in yoga nidra, in yoga therapy, in meditation teacher training. Like this is what we've been talking about, but this feels like language that I can use with physicians. It's language I can use with high achieving people. Whereas like some of the language I was using wasn't jiving, right? And so much of it was just linguistics rather than a totally new concept. And so it was like a whole continuation. And then really during the pandemic, meditation teaching just took off for me online in an unexpected way. I combined that with coaching. That also took off. And eventually it just became really clear that my clinical practice needed to take a smaller and smaller role. And then I actually haven't practiced clinically in 2 years, almost 3 years at this point. So I exclusively coach right now.
That's amazing. Congratulations. So tell us like what an average day or week or month, I know it might have a lot of variability, but kind of paint that picture for the listener.
For sure. And I think what's important to understand is it can look any way that anyone wants it to, just like you probably design your day the way that you want it to look. And so right now I'm in an interesting season of my life. I have 2 kids in college. And so sometimes I'll really slow down in the summer when I think they'll be home for a few weeks. And so right now, the summer, I've actually not been coaching a huge amount, been traveling a good bit. And so that's kind of a nice perk of this, that I have enough one-on-one clients to where I can kind of ask them to be in different places. But generally, I would say on average, I probably coach for 4 to 5 hours every day. And that feels right for me. I also host retreats. And so I'll do that at least once a quarter. And so that's at least 4 retreats a year. And those are generally 3 or 4 night retreats. And I usually take a night before and a night after. And so I really try to cushion that time so that I show up as my highest and best self, so that I can allow energy to move through me rather than it being anything about me. And so some of it is also just doing the work for myself. And the bookends of my day are always movement and meditation on both ends. So like in the mornings, it's going to be some kind of rigorous yoga and outside walk, run and meditation. And then in the evenings, it's similar, but it's more yin yoga and breath work or meditation. It feels very luxurious and also necessary for me to show up as the witness in the work that I do.
I love that. And for anybody who's listening and not watching on YouTube, the fact that Dr. Schramm says she has 2 kids in college, I mean, she looks amazing. Like, she's glowing. Her skin looks so healthy. So you can really tell, like, from the inside out, like you said, you're doing the work.
I received that. I'm going to say that right back to you, Andrea, because you are also glowing, my friend.
Yeah. I mean, I think not that this podcast is to tell everyone to go out and become a coach, but any type of work that you're doing, whether it's meditation or you become a coach, as you began speaking, I started to think about how there's universal truth.
That's right.
And whether that comes to you from reading Stoic philosophy, a religious text, meditation, leadership books, you start to recognize that there's these universal truths that, as you eloquently said, people receive those truths differently. And sometimes it's a matter of finding the right messenger and the right linguistics to be able to receive that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All of those roads are leading to that one truth. And, you know, I love that Ram Dass quote where he talks about we are all just walking each other home.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That would be such a good quote to think about going into a clinical shift, because there's so many things that are distracting us from helping walk our patients home.
Absolutely. And sometimes they walk us home.
Yeah. Oh, yes, absolutely. I have to come to one thing on your bio because I don't want to miss out on this. Can you please tell me about laughter yoga, that you're a laughter yoga teacher? What did that training look like? What does that look like? Can we do that? I am just so curious.
You can 100% do that. So laughter yoga came about in India in, I want to say it was the 1980s or 1990s. And the founder of laughter yoga, he's a physician. His name is Dr. Madan Kataria, and he actually still does a lot of the trainings. And he was publishing a fairly in-depth paper on the benefits of laughter, like just physiological benefits of laughter. And he kind of started to think about, well, why can't we get more people to laugh? And so the origin story of that is that it's in the urban cores of India where most people live. I mean, there's just high rises. There's just a lot of population density. And so really people don't have yards. And so there's just these small, tiny little parks everywhere. And that's really where people gather there in the mornings and in the evenings for sure, like before and after work. And obviously if somebody's not working, they might gather there in during the day. But he started to show up to his neighborhood park and he started to just gather people and they were interested and he told them the data and he was trying to come up with all these different jokes and he was not a great comedian, it turns out. And so it was like getting tiresome for people to try to like, they were like, oh my God, this is not funny. And so finally, like, I think it was on day five, he was like, well, why don't we just try laughing for no reason? And that's really how laughter yoga was born is, you know, there's the element of agreeing to a childlike curiosity. And if you're like this, if you got your hands crossed and you're like, this is never going to work, it's never going to work. And so a lot of it entails you just getting curious and bringing that childlike wonder into a laughter yoga session, which almost everyone is actually really willing to do. Because if you have a group of people, you obviously can't put someone on stage and be like, you do it by yourself. But once you get started, it catches on like wildfire. And so he started doing this and more people heard about it and more people started to gather. And what started to happen was it actually really hurts. Like your diaphragm hurts if you laugh for too long, right? Like we've all had that experience. And so his wife, who is a yoga teacher, was like, you know what? We should add in some breath work and a couple of yoga movements. And so that's how laughter yoga really came together. And it has been practiced literally around the world by millions and millions and millions of people. And the entire premise is to laugh for no reason. And there are different breathwork exercises that we can do. And I didn't come into laughter yoga from actually my yoga circles. I do improv at my local improv place. And it was my improv teacher that started doing laughter yoga. And I was like, this is amazing. Shout out to Amy. I would have her come to my retreats and teach us laughter yoga. And it was just a huge hit. And I thought, well, sometimes I'm traveling and I can't have her come all the way over here. So let me start to get some of this training. And it's been just such an amazing shift in physiology for 5 minutes a day.
That is so cool. And the whole time as you were describing it, my brain went to improv. And so that's so wonderful that you brought it up. And for listeners, another pod you can go back and listen to is Dr. Wendy Schofer. Absolutely love Wendy. She does a lot of improv.
She does. Well. Yes. Yeah. She's so funny. Yeah, she's great.
So cool. Before we get into today's episode, I want to share something that I think a lot of you need to hear about. Heart of Medicine 2026 is an international gathering of compassionate leaders in medicine. Doctors, nurses, allied health clinicians, coaches, healthcare leaders, all coming together July 29 through 31 at Voyagers Ayers Rock Resort in Central Australia. And yes, it's in Uluru, the spiritual heart of Australia. Because this event is intentional about where it places you, not just what it teaches you. You'll learn from world-class faculty about heart-centered care, compassionate leadership, and what it actually looks like to build a longer, more fulfilling career in medicine. You'll leave with the skills, community, and honestly, your spirit a little bit more intact. This is not a typical CME box check. This is the kind of gathering that reminds you medicine is still worth fighting for. I'll be there, and I'd love to see you there. Registration is limited because the resort is remote and intimate. So don't sit on this one. Link is in the show notes. All right, one more question, because I think some listeners may be interested in this program. You also completed an integrative health coach training from Duke. Can you talk about that program? How long was it? Is it hard to get into? How much time and what you actually got from it?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to forget some specifics because I did that in 2020. And they actually at that time had a hybrid program. And so there was an in-person component to it. So that was February of 2020. And then obviously March, we had COVID. And so then we went online. So I think mine doesn't exist. I don't think that hybrid thing exists. I think they're all online now, but it was really fantastic. I felt like it was a very comprehensive coaching approach. They have a really interesting methodology that's different than anything that I had been exposed to in the past. It gives you just a great framework for beginning, middle, and end. And it gives you a great framework for things that are so relevant, like mindfulness, like positive psychology's influence on coaching, like CBT, like ACT, like all of those things. I felt like there was just a lot of very interesting information. And I want to share this with you because I think this is so relevant. And maybe this is true for you as an ER physician as well, Andrea, but in family medicine, like, I mean, I have a list about this long. People have waited about 8 months to come see me. And so I got to get through them. And so a total unconscious way of speaking was boom, 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 boom. It was like, let's solve this. Let's solve this. Let's solve this. And constantly interrupting my patients so I could get to their next thing. Like, I hated that doing that, but that's just how we were programmed to do it. And so I showed up to coach training and like my first sort of like monitored, you know, coaching thing, she was like, well, you have more time. You don't have to hurry. And I was like, what? And then you should be like, well, what makes you want to interrupt? I'm like, cause this and this and this, you know, I was like so talky. And I think it was 3 months, maybe it was 6 months, actually. I think it was, let's say it was 6 months. And by the end of that, one of the deepest compliments, and I literally wrote it down and I put a sticky note on it, was she said, my silence was luscious. And I was like, oh my God, thank you. And it was just such a humbling experience in that, boy, you really got to slow things down. And so I felt like the integrative med really brought in a lot of concepts within mindfulness, integrated a lot of those things. So I would highly recommend it to anyone. I think they would be thrilled to have any physician. You know, I don't know how competitive it is to get in, but I don't think that a physician is going to have trouble getting into that program. I think they'd be welcomed with open arms.
That's wonderful. Yeah, I mean, it really ties into the space that I'm in right now. I mean, I still practice emergency medicine and obviously still believe that evidence-based medicine, Western medicine does a lot of good for people, but it's just not the whole story. And increasingly more, I feel drawn personally to the integrative approach and wanting to offer more of those solutions. And, you know, when I was a resident, we would say, go follow up with your primary care. And now I've shifted to, they may never see a primary care. Like, I may be the only person that shares that I'm sensing that there might be something else contributing to the symptoms that you're coming in with. I've looked back, you have had 6 CT scans and each one has not shown something that we can treat with what we have in the emergency department. Could we talk about something else that might help? So I kind of come full circle. It was kind of like a badge of honor in residency to say, like, that's not an emergency, follow up with primary care. And now I'm like on the other side saying, like, maybe I do need to change. The system has broken and not served this population so much. I can't do it every day if I'm getting pulled out for a code or something and got to go. But it's just really fascinating, I think, how many of us shift throughout our careers.
Oh, for sure. And even primary care, I mean, they might not get in for 8 months. And if they do, they might not see a physician and they might not be heard. I mean, thank you for doing the work that you do because it is so important. And you noticing that might be their only interaction with the medical system. I think that's happening more and more.
Yeah. Absolutely. I have to ask, I've heard from multiple people that your retreats are really special. There's a lot of different retreats that physicians can go on. Well, I say physicians, I guess that's question number one. Like, who are these retreats for? And if you can give us a glimpse into what happens during a retreat, we'd love to know.
Yeah, absolutely. So the retreats are for really any woman who, and most of the time it is, I would say 90% women physicians. But it turns out we also have the same exact issues as every other high achieving woman out there. And so I tend to have professors, I have attorneys, I have politicians. I mean, I have really like a whole host of different kinds of folks or social activists. Like, I have a lot of people who are dancing with burnout because of how sort of like maximum achievement they are orienting their lives towards. And so all women are welcome. And generally, you know, they're called the Inner Peace and Power Retreat, but the subtag there is just remember who you are. And a lot of it is like, who and what are you beneath the role? And how do you have a relationship with the roles that we play in our lives that feels more and more like your podcast is called Heartline, right? And I believe intuition lives in the heart. And so much of it is just almost everyone that shows up, we are all overthinkers. We are all brilliant at the intellect. I do not have a single problem with that, but it has so many dead ends. And those are the practices that we do. All the practices that we do allow us to quiet the mind and be able to listen into our heart, if you will, and so into intuition. And so people get all kinds of mind-blowing insights and intuitions. And then you can't just leave it at insight and intuition. You know, that's not how change works. And so then we combine that with coaching. And when we're all sitting in a circle and we're coaching, it is truly mind-blowing what happens when there is a completely safe, emotionally, mentally, physically safe space where women can feel seen and heard and also be encouraged or at least see other women be vulnerable. They just come out so magically. And so I tend to have a core number of people who have never missed a single retreat. I mean, mind you, these are multiple retreats every year. So I think that's an attestation. They feel they can go even deeper if they can go to another retreat, if you will.
I love that. That is so awesome. So I definitely want a link to that in our show notes. And I hope to attend one in 2027.
That would be amazing. Yes.
Awesome.
Yes.
I want to move to our rapid questions. But before I do that, I want to ask you if there's any question or something you want to share with the audience that we haven't covered.
You know, I think obviously your audience knows you and knows the power of being able to tap into their intuition, into their heart. And I think the water that we're swimming in doesn't encourage that. And I think that's what makes the work that you do, Andrea, so special. And so really giving themselves credit for tuning in, for being able to attune to the messages that you're able to give them and the work that you're doing, I think they're already like 90% of the way to where they need to be. And so just grateful for the community that you have formed and the work that you do.
Yeah, that's so beautifully said. And so I think for the listener that feels like you're a fish out of water, that's okay. I've really had to wrestle with that. I am different than a lot of people in medicine. And like we were talking about earlier, some of the things that medicine does to us, it's not always making us a better human. And it's weird, like I write about in my book, it's like in some ways you go full circle. It's like it hardens you and then it's like the softening. Like I'm in the softening phase right now. And that is antithetical to a lot of the people that you're around. And so going back to that tall poppy episode that I did, I ended that episode saying, that's why community is so important. Because once you start to go down this different path that you're like, I'm beginning to feel like I want to do something integrative, or, you know, I want to take my career a little bit different, or I want to show up to work and not be cynical or use gallows humor, it can start to feel incredibly isolating. And so I think finding spaces, you know, you and I, before we started recording, talked about the Physician Coach Summit is a space that we feel really supported in. I'm going to the Women in Medicine Summit that Dr. Shika Jain organizes. That's a space I feel really supported in. And so finding those other change makers, following those other people that are ready to start following the beat of a different drum is so, so needed right now. Oh, this is
needed.
So
fun. Yes.
Okay, let's move into the rapid fire. The first question I want to ask you is if you could make one change in medical education, you are in charge and you only get to make one, what would it be?
I think it would have to be a 6-week course in self-compassion. No questions asked.
I love that answer. Yeah, that's really good. Okay, self-compassion. All right, let's be thinking about that, my fellow medical educators. All right. So we fixed medical education. One book that you
would recommend for a medical student. Oof, there's so many books. Oh, dear. You know, I'm just finishing up, and this may not apply to anyone or everyone, but I just finished up the Ram Dass book, Polishing the Mirror, and followed closely before that with Becoming Nobody. And so I'm just really into Ram Dass right now. So I think that's what's coming up for me. And Be Here Now was his first book. I mean, he published dozens of books. And so if somebody's interested in that mindfulness, spirituality, if that's calling to them, and you know, his other name was Richard Alpert, and you probably know his story. He was fired from Harvard for giving his students LSD and psilocybin and experimenting with spirituality and expanded states of consciousness. And so then he went to India, became a devotee for many years, and changed his name to Ram Dass and came back and was very prolific in his teachings.
Awesome. That sounds super interesting. If there's one conference that you could recommend, maybe something a little bit off the beaten track.
Off the beaten track. Well, you just mentioned the Physician Coaching Summit, which I think is fantastic. I'm going to put in a plug. So one of my mentors and coaches is Dr. Elaine Stagerberg, and they do real estate at scale. And the reason I think that's important is because if we can figure out financial freedom, I know it gives us time freedom as well. And so I found that to be true for myself, where if I could solve that puzzle, then I could work as much as I wanted to and create as much impact as I wanted to without the pressures that come from some of those things. And so they actually put on a conference every September called Real Estate Real Life in Rochester, Minnesota. I'm going to be there. So that's an off the beaten path one. If somebody hasn't heard about Real Estate Real Life, I would say go check it out.
Awesome. And so that was part of your financial plan.
Yeah, having known nothing and having no community in real estate, my husband and I dabbled and became more knowledgeable in real estate when the kids were little. I really, truly don't know what I was thinking because I was taking risks that I probably shouldn't have been taking, but they were calculated risks, and we have commercial real estate that we work in.
That's awesome. That's great. So definitely one people should think about and check out, and maybe we can have her on the podcast. I love that recommendation. Is there a mantra or word that you say to yourself when you're stressed, scared, sad?
There are so many. And I think probably the most important one that just kind of comes on is just taking a breath, hand on heart, and just noticing what's there as the witness. So not even any words, because I think some of this knowing is pre-verbal. And it's also sometimes important as just a reminder for me, and this may sound really strange, but it's me remembering I'm not this body and I'm not this mind. And so it just kind of helps me to remember, like, hey, take a breath. This is happening. We're not denying that it's happening. Can you take a breath? And can you witness this? Can you become aware of it first before you take the next action? Because the thing is, our reactions always are born from the past. And certainly, I am not free of those reactions, but it does help me take a beat between my first reaction and then my ultimate response.
That is so fascinating because that really dovetails with what I was talking with Dr. Rob Orman about, finding that space between stimulus and response. You know, the Steve Covey or Viktor Frankl, whoever the quotes.
That's right. Yes.
And I love how you said touching the heart. And where I've seen that done the most, interestingly, was when I was in Australia and I attended a physician retreat that Sri Johnson puts together with the Recalibrate community. Is I see Australians do that a lot. And so I actually asked during the retreat, I'm like, I see when you're moved by something, you all like touch your heart. Like, I don't see Americans do that very often. And they're like, yeah, I don't know, just that's what we do. So I was like, yeah. I told myself I was going to take it then, but I haven't really been doing that. And I've also heard, you know, again, when something very stressful is happening, I've heard people say, like, doing this, crossing your arms and tapping. So like something somatic, but I really do like that heart. I'm going to try. I've decided my word, you know, I've never really had a word, and Rob got me thinking about this, and it was good. His word is good. And so I was like, heart is heartline heart. I literally have it tattooed on my arm.
Wow.
There it is.
Well, I have a tattoo, but I don't have Heartline on there.
So heart is really my word. So if I can also add like literally feeling my heart. All right, I'm going to try it. So that's my call to action for the listeners, is to be thinking about that word, that practice that you can do that connects you back to your heart. And I'd love to hear, you know, listeners, what those are. So we can hit me up on Instagram or LinkedIn and share what you're doing for that practice. Well, this has been a complete joy. And I know there's going to be listeners that feel very connected to you and are ready to reach out for coaching or just to learn more about you. So where can they connect with you?
Super easy. My website is just my name. It's just RashmiShram.com. I'm also just DR period. So Dr. Rashmi Shram. It's Rashmi Shram MD on LinkedIn, but everything else is just Dr. Rashmi Shram. So I'd love to connect.
Yep. So Shram is S-C-H-R-A-M-M. So two M's with Shram. I found her very easily on LinkedIn. So that's very nice. Well, this has just been really a treat. It's been, I think, maybe about a year in the making.
I think so. But that's, you know, good things are worth the wait, aren't they, for you and me? Yeah.
Yeah, they really are. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast. And for the listeners, don't forget to follow your Heartline, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Heartline, Changemaking in Healthcare. If you're ready to deepen your own inner work or want to bring these conversations into your organization, visit AndreaAustinMD.com. You'll find resources and ways to connect with me for coaching, speaking, or consulting. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a 5-star review, and share this episode with a friend or colleague. Until next time, keep following your Heartline. This podcast represents the views of the host and guests. It does not represent the views of any entity we work for or with. It is also for informational use only and does not replace any professional advice, including medical or psychological. If you are interested in unlocking your true potential, reach out to me. If you're an organization interested in supporting the well-being of your people, I'd love to connect on innovative solutions. Schedule a strategy session at AndreaAustinMD.com.